Hello, and thank you for listening to the Prestige Property Group podcast. With each podcast, we will be interviewing one of our expert property professionals about market conditions and advice for property buyers in their specialist locality. In this episode, Mike Brownholz, PPG's Director of Spanish Sales, speaks to Alan Nicholson, who's in charge of our Tenerife operation. Mike's first question was, what kind of properties are people looking for right now?
Primarily, the properties that we're selling tend to be at the top of the market and the bottom of the market.
Yeah.
Excuse me. In other words, the ones which tend not to be mortgage dependent. The prices have held up fairly well here compared to some other parts of Europe. But like the banks in the UK, the Spanish banks are fairly reluctant to lend to only the best clients just now. So the people who are in this 500,000 euro plus area tend to be people who are fairly wealthy and don't really need mortgages.
Yeah.
So that kind of product is still selling and has continued to hold its price and develop its price as we would expect normally.
Yes.
And conversely, at the other end of the market, which we would consider to be probably 120,000 euros downwards, this would tend to be small studios and one-bedroom apartments.
Yes.
This part of the market is tended to be purchased by people, more elderly people, perhaps with pension lump sums, even like redundancy payments or things
yeah.
like that, where they tend to have the money largely available and don't need a mortgage either. And again, that end of the market is still moving very, very well. It's the centre of the market where people in the 200,000-300,000 euro area, where people generally need to have a mortgage of some description. That's where we're having some difficulty presently. But the other parts are going on as normal.
I mean, have you noticed a big reduction? I mean, it's obviously the last year hasn't been one of the greatest on record. Has the wave of downturn hit the Canary Islands?
Well, in our experience here, the asking prices are pretty much the same as they are, or they were rather 12 months ago.
Yeah.
The main difference being that 12 months ago, when people felt they were in a seller's market, the sellers were very, very strong in the price, and we would then recommend only to buyers only to offer maybe a couple of thousand euros under the price if they wanted to make an offer.
Mm-hmm.
However, these days, there are certain sections of the community, for instance, people who are dependent on perhaps a pension paid in sterling, where obviously that converts to less euros than it did previously.
Yeah.
They're obviously very keen to sell and get back to the UK where their pension would be worth, and they think at least would be worth more. And these people would tend to be accepting offers against the properties that they would never have accepted 12 months ago. So we're seeing the marketplace holding up remarkably well, given the way that the press seems to imply the British marketplace is. But there are very, very good opportunities here. You just have to get yourself with a good agent and find the opportunities as they arise.
Yeah, I see. So, I mean, are the types of buyers the same as they have been over the last sort of 5 to 10 years, or are you seeing more people from kind of who've already got euros coming to the Canaries? I mean, you know, obviously the people who are sitting on pounds are going to be getting less for their money at this point, or is that not the case?
Yeah, well, I mean, what we're trying to do is kind of match it up. So, if somebody says, well, you know, if I'd have bought 6 months ago, this particular property was 200,000 euros, then what we tend to do is convert that back to sterling and look at what its current cost would be in sterling and try and talk to the sellers and see if they'll take part or all of the hit in the reduction. Because in many cases, people can be selling properties here and returning the euros back into sterling.
Yeah.
In case they become huge winners in this situation, the entire reciprocal of the loss that the buyer's making. So when we find people, sellers, who, and there's always been these people who wanted to return for one reason or another to the UK,
yeah.
They're going to make an awful lot more money in sterling for their euros just now, and consequently subsequently, if we can explain the sort of mathematics to them, they're usually willing to take a substantial reduction.
Yeah.
So largely the people who come here to live are the kind of people who are getting towards the end of their working life, perhaps. They want to invest some money in a holiday home. They want to improve the quality of their life. And also younger people who have decided that they don't really want to get involved in this kind of negative thing that keeps going on in the UK just now. Additionally, there are people from countries that are emerging, like Russians and people from the what was previously called Eastern Bloc.
Yes.
Who have got wealth that previously wasn't available to people in these kind of areas of Europe. So they're coming a lot. Central Europeans, a lot of Belgians coming here to buy property. So the people from the UK tend to be the same, the people from the same sort of walk of life, but much more central and Eastern Europeans.
Yeah, I see. So what you're basically finding is that you've still got the British buyers, if you like, and that the vendors in Tenerife are prepared to make allowances for the let's hope the temporary exchange rate position, but you've got an emergent set of buyers coming in from the east, if you like, and from new markets.
Yeah, which absolutely. We find that people's willingness to negotiate is much, much more than it ever was previously, and that's really. Really helping the guys that are coming here wanting to buy. And I feel confident that the banks have to start lending again in the very, very near future. They're just all kind of nervous just now.
That's right.
I'm sure they by the middle end of 2009, the mortgage situation will have rectified itself. And while neither the banks nor, frankly, we want a return to the situation where British, American and Central European banks were giving mortgages to people who were unlikely to be able to pay them back.
Yeah.
We certainly would like to see some relaxation in the very, very stringent rules that they're applying just now to new mortgage applications.
Yeah. Okay. Now, of the types of buyers that you touched on back there, what are the main drivers for people wanting to move to Tenerife of the people buying property? Are they primarily looking to retire? Are they investors? Are they holiday makers? Or is it a mixture of all three? Is there a particular sort of key market, or is it just a mixture?
Well, it's a mixture, of course, but there's always been people who, if they had sufficient funds, would like to come here. And Tenerife claims to be one of the most revisited places. In other words, a place that people come perpetually back to.
Yeah.
Central Europe, or Central and Southern Europe. And, we see that ourselves. We see the same people coming back time and time again. And consequently, it becomes much more attractive to you if you select a place that you particularly like.
Yeah.
And you like the climate and you like the people. English is extensively spoken in the south of Tenerife. It's a relatively short air flight. It's generally under 4 hours now. And there's flights available from virtually every airport in the UK now. So there's a lot of attractions for people from a holidaymaker standpoint and from people who wish to just improve the way that they live, to have longer days in winter time. I noticed recently it was getting dark at 3:30 when I was in England. On the same day it was getting dark at 6:30 in Tenerife.
Mm-hmm.
So while we don't have the 5 o'clock sunrises in the summertime like you have in England, we do have a lot more daytime hours apparently to use for leisure pursuits, so we can play tennis or football or golf or whatever
later into the evening
than you would be able to
throughout the winter time. Yeah, and of course you have got that just incredible weather pretty much most of the year.
Well, I mean it's absolutely incredible, and many people come here in winter time thinking that in summertime it's going to be excruciatingly warm, and I've personally experienced that in North Africa, which is not very far away from where we are. We're located just off the northwest coast of Africa,
yeah,
about 1,000 miles south of Spain, 2,000 miles due south of England. But because of the subtropical nature of the islands, We have this very, very benign climate indeed, and where if you were in Tunisia or Cyprus or some of these kind of places in August,
yeah.
you could expect the temperatures to be 40 degrees plus.
Yeah, with the continental heat. Yeah.
Further east in Dubai and places like that, it can be 50 degrees plus.
Yeah, yeah. Which is...
Now, if you've ever experienced that, you'll know that it makes it almost impossible to step out of the hotel.
Yeah.
I recently experienced it in Las Vegas in June, where the temperatures were just so warm that half an hour at the pool you had to go inside.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't have anything like that here. We have, as I said earlier, generally around 28 degrees, which is a very, very comfortable temperature, even for people from the UK who don't normally experience temperatures much above 22 or 23 degrees. But 28 degrees is a very, very comfortable temperature. As long as people, we always advise them to put some high factor sun oil on initially. But that's really the main attraction here. Also, it's still very, very cheap to live here, despite the diminishing value of the pound,
yeah.
which, as you say, we hope is a temporary setback. But still here, you know, you can buy a beer for a euro. You can buy, I saw somebody buy a packet of Marlboro yesterday for €2.40, which I guess is about £5 or £6 in the UK.
Yeah.
Transport cost is very, very low. Petrol is less than 50% of the price in the UK.
Yeah.
Shopping in the Spanish supermarkets is a fraction of the cost for fresh food and so on.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of attractions here, some of which are very apparent given the temperature and the climate.
Yeah.
Some of which are less apparent given the sort of press that you see where they, it's implied that things have become very expensive here. It's still very, very cheap here, and it still feels very, very expensive when I walk into a restaurant in England and have to pay £15 or £20 or £25 for a bottle of wine.
No,
I know I can get a nice bottle of wine in a restaurant here for perhaps about €8 or €10.
Yeah, I know. It is. It, whichever way you look at it, it's still going to be inexpensive.
Mm. Whether for holidays or whether for living here.
Yeah. yeah.
And another example for people who buy property here, a council tax. I guess in England is several thousand pounds.
Yeah.
Council tax here on a two-bedroom apartment would be around 300 or 400 euros.
That's
so
incredible.
You can see that there are massive differences in the sort of taxation system
here.
And that reflects through the cost of fuel and things like that as well. It's much, much cheaper because they're putting a very small amount of tax on petrol and diesel.
This brings me into my next sort of question, which would be for people who are concerned with perhaps making some money. Are there any opportunities for investors that you can think of, particularly at the moment in Tenerife? Can somebody come in and say, well, I want to invest some money, but I want to make a capital return on it. I'm prepared to do some work on a property. You know, obviously that's a big, big market in France, which is somewhere else we operate. But would that be something that somebody could do in Tenerife?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, South Tenerife historically was built up around the port of Los Cristianos, which has been there for many hundreds of years.
Yeah.
It evolved into Playa de las Americas, which has evolved across now into the area they call Costa de Eje. Now, given that a lot of these properties were built 20 or 25 years ago and have been extensively used, what you find in a lot of complexes is that because of the way the community system works here, where every person that owns an apartment has to contribute to the community funding, the common areas like the pools and the terraces and the gardens and so on are
yeah.
usually in very, very good condition. But sometimes the apartments can be a little bit worn out. So even ourselves, through our own estate agency, we've, in the last 18 months or so, bought properties here which were in need of renovation, did the renovation where the work was done much, much cheaper than it would be in the UK, and were able to sell the properties and make a reasonable amount of profit, not a massive amount, but a reasonable amount of profit
mm-hmm.
In a very short period of time, typically around 3 months.
Got it. So
previously, people, including ourselves, invested in pre-construction properties. Excuse me. Where the idea was that you would pay perhaps 20% at the outset of the project, which the builder would use as part of the money, the budget to build the properties, and then you would sell the property nearer the end of the building project. However, that's kind of not really working very well now. And a lot of people are worried because they hear all this bad press about builders. In fact, we've never seen, to the best of my knowledge, there's no builders gone bankrupt or anywhere near bankrupt in Tenerife yet. But, of course, we get tarred with the same brush as Spain, which, as I said, is 1,000 miles away.
Yeah.
And people are worried about buying pre-construction properties in case there's a problem with the builder and they lose their money. So, like a lot of things these days, it's a feature of confidence. And when the confidence is low, people won't do it. So because there's no resale market, we tend not to encourage clients to buy pre-construction. But I certainly would encourage them to look carefully at the opportunities that were available, yeah. particularly if they're able to spend a little bit of time here just overseeing some remodelling work inside some of the apartments, taking out some of the sort of Spanish-style kitchens and things,
yeah.
and putting in modern kitchens, which are very, very available here and very, very moderately priced. And you can really turn the proverbial sow's ear into surplus very, very quickly and very, very profitably.
Well, that's good to know, and I think that's something that a lot of our clients are very interested in doing. You know, talking about Tenerife specifically, are there any sort of, well, I know there's traditionally popular areas, but are there any emergent areas that everybody seems to be interested in, or, you know, where is it all happening? Is there a kind of buzz real estate place at the moment, or is it pretty much as it's always been?
No, I would say, that the main emergent area, which is where our offices are, is in the Fania Bay and yep. Costa Adeje area. Uh-huh. Now, this is not like a new area which is 50 miles away from anywhere. This is part of the southern conurbation in Tenerife. It's adjacent to the area of Playa de las Americas, which mm-hmm. is more famous for its sort of nightclubs and things like that.
Yeah.
But in the area of Costa Adeje Golf, which last year hosted an Elton John concert, this year is going to host a Rod Stewart concert. The emphasis there is on quality, and that's quality, whether it be in the kind of hotels that they're building, which have got to be minimum 4-star hotels, or the kind of properties that they're building, where there's got to be a minimum size of property and by way of apartments.
Yeah.
They can only build them 3 high, so we don't have any of these monstrous tower blocks that you get in various places. And in particular, the area of Adeje Golf, where we own a couple of villas ourselves, which we let to clients.
Yeah.
It's particularly good from an investment point of view and from a quality of life point of view. So if we had a client that had a reasonable budget that was looking for a villa, we would be pointing them generally in the direction of Costa Adeje Golf.
Yeah.
There are other areas. The area where I live is San Eugenio, Torviscas, Roque del Conde, and another very nice area is La Caleta, which is just right on the very, very coastline. La Caleta means small bay in Spanish, and it has an array of typically Spanish and also continental restaurants around it.
Mm-hmm.
Some very, very nice apartments there, typically from around 200,000 euros. So somebody looking for a holiday apartment or a small place to spend maybe 6 months of the year, which is very popular here,
mm-hmm.
That's the kind of place that we would be directing them towards.
I understand.
They're also within 10, 15 minutes drive of the airport. The TF1, the main motorway, connects just about everywhere to everywhere. So there's no problem in getting there. There's no hour and a half or 2 hour journeys on the bus or by public transport.
Yeah, how long does it take from where you are to the airport, if I can ask?
Well, the nearest of the main tourist areas is Golf del Surf, which, as the crow flies, is about 1 mile from the airport.
Yeah.
But suffers slightly from the consequent aircraft noise. The main area, moving geographically, is Los Cristianos, which is about 10 kilometres door-to-door on the motorway. Then Las Americas, which would maybe be 12 kilometres, and as far as Costa Adeje Golf, which is about 15 kilometres.
Oh, so
you would not expect it to take any more than 20 minutes in the very, very busiest of times, and perhaps as little as 10 or 15 minutes in the evening or at night.
That's amazing.
And the roads are very, very good. They're maintained in very, very good condition.
Yeah, because we have similar distances on the French Riviera. I don't know if in the summer it can take 2 hours to go a similar distance. Well, just because of the roads, and they haven't got space to put a proper motorway, you see, so...
Yeah, well, if there's any more than 12 cars queuing at an exit here, it's considered to be a major traffic jam.
Got it.
The local authorities here have been very, very sensible about the way they've insisted that the infrastructure, both the road infrastructure and other infrastructural things like electrical supply and sewage and so on, is in place before they start to build the houses and the bars and restaurants and things. And again, in the Adeje Golf area, it's very, very evident that that's an area which in future they'll want to build a lot of villas and things on.
Mm-hmm.
But they've installed already a dual carriageway system there. They've put the lampposts up, they've put the trees up, everything's ready. All the infrastructural things are in place, the electrical supplies and everything are all done. So gone are the days of 7 or 8 years ago when they had planned power cuts and things like that because the infrastructure just wasn't sufficient. Everything's done really ahead of the game now.
Yeah, I see. Now, do you have any advice for our clients on when would be the best time of year to come out and start searching? You know, a lot of our markets, there is a season for buyers and sellers. I mean, obviously at the end of the summer, people start thinking about putting on their properties on the market because the summer rental, that's their last summer rental. And then the buyers come because they know that there's going to be more properties on the market. And obviously after Christmas and the new year before the summer season, we have another season then. But obviously that may not apply so much to Tenerife. Do you have a season or a time when people should come to look to buy?
Not particularly. I mean, because the very narrow temperature band between summer and winter here, it's not very evident when it's summer and when it's winter. And we have, for people wishing to rent properties out, we have a year-long rental capability for people wanting to buy bars or restaurants. The bars and restaurants here are open 52 weeks of the year,
yeah,
as opposed to, say, in the Balearic Islands, in Ibiza, or Mallorca, or Menorca, where they would probably close, well, in my experience, in October or something like that, and open Easter. Here, everything's open the year through. One thing that used to stimulate the market, perhaps not quite so much now, was there's a lot of older people come here in winter time, so they'll come perhaps in September or so and stay through to March or April.
Yes.
And they tended to stimulate the property market because they would come and either sell or buy or whatever, and that would start a cycle of purchasing. So it's always been considered to be traditionally the most busy time.
Right.
For estate agents was in autumn and in early new year.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, again, because of the heat and because of the number of holiday makers, some of the Mediterranean resorts certainly find July and August to be not good moments for people to come and look for properties particularly. But you wouldn't say that applies with you particularly?
Not particularly, no. I mean, almost to the contrary. You know, there's going to be less buyers around in July and August because there's going to be more holiday makers, so
yeah,
the accommodation and so on is going to be filled up by people primarily want to come here for a week or 2 weeks holiday.
Yeah.
But maybe a good time to be looking when there's less competition around. And certainly we found in the early part of summer, in the sort of May-June time, that although it's traditionally a slightly quieter time here because it's sort of between seasons, it becomes a very popular time for people who are serious about buying property and want to come around and have a real good look. The estate agents will have more time available to spend with them and take them to see more properties. And I mean, good estate agents here will spend some time with the clients, just driving them around, not going into properties, just making them understand where the different areas are, explaining them the benefits of being in one area or another area.
Yeah.
And we would certainly wish to do that because we've seen people come here and with a dream of living in a Spanish village somewhere, and sometimes that dream can turn bad for them because they don't realise that nobody speaks English and there's no BBC and there's no Sun newspaper and so on and so on.
Yeah.
So it's best for them to come and stay in the main resorts initially, and when they subsequently learn to speak Spanish and they understand the customs and they start eating Spanish-style food and things like that, then's the time to go and live in the villages.
Yeah, I'm with you.
As far as time of year is concerned, yeah, we've got clients the year round, more busy in the late autumn and well, what's called winter here, but it doesn't feel like winter when you're no. sitting outside with your shorts and your T-shirt on in December or January.
Yeah. So once somebody's identified a property and they've decided they'd like to, you know, go ahead with a purchase, could you just take us through what the basic procedure is with, you know, going from, you know, saying I want that apartment to owning the apartment? What are the stages, please?
Yeah, well, there's some areas where it's the same as in the UK, and some areas where it's entirely different. Most properties is conveyed here through estate agents. Very, very few properties are done without estate agents.
Yeah.
For reasons of language, contractual issues, organisation, and so on. So the first thing a client needs to do is find an estate agent he feels comfortable with,
yeah.
somebody that can provide references from other clients. We, in particular, ask every client to complete a testimonial where they're invited to put their own comments down. And you can see what these people think, and you can phone these people up and ask them what they really thought of us. And so, and we have about 200 testimonials now.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing I would say. Make sure you're comfortable with the estate agent, whether they be English people, Scottish people, Spanish people, or whatever.
Yeah.
Having then went round and saw the property of your dreams, one of the main differences here is that there's no conventional system for survey like you would have in the UK. And it's very much then a buyer beware situation. You've got to, you know, use your own diligence to make sure that the place that you're looking at buying is suitable for your needs. Now, we don't have the same sort of problems caused by weather and things that tend to happen in the UK, but still you have to use some common sense in it and just be vigilant, make sure you see the place a couple of times, make sure it's exactly as it's been explained to you. Having done that, make an offer, go through the negotiation process, and eventually, hopefully, come to an agreement with the seller. And this is where the estate agent can get very involved and help smooth the process of negotiation. Having agreed the price with the seller, the process is that a contract is created, usually by the estate agent, who has a standard contract. My advice would always be to insist that it has a side-by-side translation in Spanish, even if you think you know a little bit of Spanish or you learned a little bit at school. You're signing a legal document, which will soon necessitate you paying a deposit, which won't be returnable if you drop out of the contract.
Understood.
So, at this stage, it's just a great idea to get a lawyer, and most of the lawyers that I'm aware of in Tenerife are very, very good. There's very, very few that would be considered to be dodgy, so you can pick your own lawyer, or you can select a lawyer from the list from the estate agents, and he'll guide you through the process subsequently. But in essence, here, you're required to make an initial deposit, which would be typically around 3,000 euros. That then takes the property off the market within a reasonable period of time, and that would normally be 10 or 14 days. You would be expected to make that up to 10% of the purchase price. The process then on is carried out by the lawyer and the estate agent. All the checks are done to ensure that the seller owns the property. It's very, very important that the lawyer ensures that there are no debts on the property.
Yeah.
Because under Spanish law, if you acquire the property and it has a debt, and that debt could be a 100,000 euro mortgage, or it could be money owed to the local authority or to the electric company or the water company, you acquire that debt with the house. So it's absolutely critical that that's checked and made sure that everyone's okay. Having done all that, a date's set, and everybody has to go to the office of the public notary. The public notary is a very, very senior official in the system, the legal system in Spain. He's considered to be way above the level of any lawyer or anybody who might be acting for you. You go with your lawyer to that office. The seller has to come as well. The estate agent should be there also. And the transaction is done in front of the notary, who signs off the deeds, makes sure that everybody understands what they're buying, what they're selling, the mortgages that are on the property have been redeemed normally at the same time. So there can be a whole host of people turn up at the notary's office. Now, you can avoid going to the notary's office by giving a power of attorney to the estate agent or the lawyer, but a word of warning is be very, very careful who you give a power of attorney to.
Yeah.
It's a very, very important legal document. And if you give an unrestricted power of attorney to somebody, he has the right to go to your bank and empty your bank account. He has the right to purchase things on your behalf, sell things on your behalf, and so on.
Thanks once again, Alan Nicholson, in our Tenerife office. If you'd like to find out any more information about properties in Tenerife, please see our website at www.prestigeproperty.co.uk.